Good morning. Welcome, everyone, this morning. You know, there's a young lady here in this congregation that 12 years ago said, "I do," and she made history, at least for me. And I've not regretted that day. I've been tremendously blessed. I was also blessed this morning by the devotional that Marcus had shared in Philippians 2:5 there. That was a verse that stood out to me in a new way here several months back. And probably not every one of you is as dense as I am, but I never really realized the punctuation there, but the sentence actually starts in verse 5 and goes down through verse 8. And it's all connected right there. It says, "Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but took upon himself the form of a servant." And as he was talking about the mind of the redeemed, are we broken before God? Are we able to, like Christ, lay our will down and not think it robbery to give up our position or to give up our education or to give up our reputation or to give up whatever it is that God wants us to give up? Are we able to take that, to have that mind in us that we can give that up? And that was a blessing to me this morning. So this morning, for a text, I'd like to turn to Matthew 5 verse 9 again, or Matthew 5 again in verse 9. And this morning, I'd ask that you pray for me here, because I'm not sure how these thoughts are all going to come out this morning. My goal or my desire is that God would be glorified here. And so just pray for the message this morning if you would. Matthew 5 verse 9 says, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God." That's what Jesus told the crowd that was there, that he was speaking to at that time. "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God." If there's a blessing for being a peacemaker, is there a curse for being a divisive person? You know, peace is something that we all want. It's a beautiful quality that we admire in other people, because we all love to be around people that make us feel good about ourselves. And we like to be around people that are non-confrontational, or most of us do. I'm not one that really enjoys conflict of any kind, so I really like when people are peacemakers. Sometimes it's a costly journey to be a peacemaker. 1 Corinthians 14:33 says, "For God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, as in all churches of the saints." Where peace is, there is order. Where chaos is, there is havoc. In the beginning, when God created the world, it says that darkness moved on the face of the deep. There was nothing. It was, I'm going to call it havoc, because there was nothing there. It was just moisture and nothing. Or I don't know what it was. It was just, I don't know, space maybe. But God created the world. He made order out of chaos. He created a beautiful world, tranquil, peaceful, unspoiled by sin. Perfect. Some might say that the only flaw that he did there was that he gave man the choice. But God knew what he was doing there too. So, yeah, it was a perfect world. Garden, animals, man, weather, perfect weather. And along comes a serpent in a tree and plants that doubt in Eve's mind. Satan was controlling the serpent, or was the serpent. But Satan's goal is to destroy peace. That's Satan's goal. To create chaos and tear down God's order. That's Satan's goal. He did this originally by getting Eve to question God's instructions. He planted doubt in her mind, getting her to question God's intentions. And when she questioned God's intentions, instead of looking at God as the authority, as the one that knew best, or the one whose instructions were for her good, Satan planted doubt in there that God was keeping something good from her. This led to Eve and Adam disobeying God, and the deadly effect of sin was introduced into the world, into God's perfect world. And this resulted in death, chaos, and destruction. And it's been going on ever since. It just gets worse and worse. You might say that the second law of thermodynamics was put into play here when sin came into the world, in that things decay. Entropy, they call it, is... things don't get better and better and better. They get worse and worse, and there's a life cycle. Death was introduced there. But on the other hand, peace is a characteristic of Christ and of God. God's the author of confusion. Satan is the author of destruction. Satan does not like God, and Satan seeks to tear down whatever God builds up. And one reason why Satan is so busy working in our hearts is because we're created in the likeness of God. And Satan hates the likeness of God. And he tries to corrupt the likeness of God. But peace is a characteristic of Christ. Christ was prophesied as the Prince of Peace. In Isaiah 9:6, one of the names for Christ, it says, "For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace." Christ was an example of peacemaking. In 1 Peter 2:23, it was spoken of Christ. It says, "Who, when he was reviled, reviled not again. When he suffered, he threatened not, but committed himself to him that judgeth righteously." You know, the doctrine of non-resistance, as given there in Matthew 5, is from a heart of God, illustrating peacemaking. Now, peace is the absence of turmoil. There's one definition of peace. So if a country is at war and you have a government that is oppressive and is very, very oppressive, you have structure and oppression, you have order, but there's no peace. But what if the government is gone and you have no war, you have peace but no government? That peace without structure degenerates into chaos again, or has a tendency to do that. But an ideal situation is if you can have peace with structure, then the result is an environment where life can grow, construction happens, there's peace there. That's in a country. In a church, it's similar. If you have chaos can militate against peace also. Where there is peace, order, peace and order, life can grow. A church at peace is an environment for spiritual growth. Peace between brethren is a beautiful example of Christ at work. But you know, there's so many ways Satan comes at us, and he tries to take this peace and kill it or destroy it. The question that I had thought of, can God's kingdom be built without peace? If you think about that, can God's kingdom be built without peace? Another way to say it, can God's kingdom be built with chaos? If God is the author of peace and Satan is the author of confusion, can God's kingdom be built without peace? No, I don't think so. Sometimes where we are put in situations where we have opportunity to contribute to building peace or to add to the chaos. And we get in these situations sometimes unawares, and we're put on the test right now. What do we do with opportunities like that or situations like that? In Proverbs 15:1, it says, "A soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger." A soft answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. So in our house, we have this played out quite a bit sometimes. Siblings take advantage of each other, and let's say that children, siblings, I'm going to use siblings because they tend to take each other for granted, like I said. So let's say that there's two pieces of candy. You have a big chocolate bar and you have a small M&M, for example. That's extreme there. You have two pieces of candy to go around to three people. What happens, the first one that comes up picks the biggest one. The second one that comes up gets the small one. What happens with the third one? The third one says, he says or she says, "You took it all. You're selfish." Which isn't entirely untrue. So what happens now? Does the one that gets accused respond angrily and said, "No, I'm not. You are just slow. You didn't get it quick enough." Then it escalates and they start yelling louder and whatever they, unless another option, if the one that got the candy bar would say, "Here, I'll share with you," that would be a soft answer and it creates peace. Another thing, sharing toys. Children are an example. Sometimes they are, well, children are very much, very transparent, you might say. So their thoughts and feelings are just worn out on their shirt sleeve. But a child that's taught to share, a child that's taught to make peace, is taught to be a peacemaker, is primed to be a peacemaker as an adult quicker. They have their spirit, their will to give up and all that. But as adults, we have opportunity to be peacemakers too. Maybe when someone bluntly shares our faults and shortcomings with us, how do we respond? Do we escalate the situation by returning the favor? Or do we humbly accept, whether it's true or not, just humbly accept it? Or what about if a rumor comes back to us that's untrue or partially true, but it harms our reputation? What do we do with that? Do we respond by starting another rumor or by sharing things that shouldn't be shared? Or what if our neighbors are impossibly annoying? How do we respond to that? What if you have a neighbor that's constantly catching you when you're outside to tell you that your children are throwing rocks in his yard, or the water from your side of the yard is flooding his and he doesn't like it, and you can't do anything about it, but he still likes to grumble to you? Or what about if your animals get into his garden? And he just little things, and he complains and complains. How do we respond to that situation? Or how is it as for us, as we have customers that we deal with, and sometimes we make mistakes, and customers call in and they're less than happy with whatever. Sometimes they can share that with you in an unpolished way. How do we deal with that? Or how do we deal if it's not a mistake and they're just trying to take advantage of us and take us for a ride and tell us that you say you're a Christian, but you do this and this and this? How do we reflect Jesus then? Or don't we reflect Jesus? These are scenarios that I'm sure some of you have experienced. Maybe all of you have experienced some of these. But I hope you haven't experienced this last one. But what if a business deal with a brother in the church is bad, and we feel like we've been shorted or cheated somehow? Or maybe we have been, we just don't feel like it. Maybe it is outright. How do we treat that? Do we respond in anger and escalate the situation there? Or do we share it with, do we send a letter to the budget to let everybody know how this worked? Or tell everybody that we know? There's so many ways that we can be peacemakers, that we can reflect Christ. Are we willing to take the short end to be in an effort to be peaceful? Are we willing to take the short end and absorb that? Another thing, Proverbs 15:2, it's the next verse there. This is another way that we can be peacemakers. But it says, the tongue of the wise useth knowledge aright, but the mouth of fools poureth out foolishness. So how do we handle this? How do we handle the opportunity when we hear some news that's too good to sit on about a mutual acquaintance that is damaging to his reputation or their reputation, or at best it's unflattering, at worst it's damaging to their character or their reputation, what do we do with that? Do we use that knowledge rightly? Or are we like the fool and pour out foolishness and keep spreading it? Part of that comes back to pride, because we feel like by sharing it, it's a way that we can take some credit, or it boosts our ego somehow. But it's highly damaging to other to the people that we're talking about. What does it take to be a peacemaker? We run into all these situations all the time. And when we think of non-resistance, we think of the big things. So the draft comes up and we say, well, we can't fight because the Bible says we can't kill. Or we don't kill because we're conscientiously opposed to that. But how is it? Do we seek to build peace? Do we seek to be like Christ and just absorb and take and give up our reputation, give up our, if need be, our advantage or our whatever it is that we have? Are we willing to give it up for the sake of peace? What does it take to be a peacemaker? If you would turn to Genesis 13, I'd like to read the account here. Abraham was called the friend of God. And he wasn't called the friend of God just because God rolled the dice and decided that Abraham would make a good friend. Abraham was called the friend of God because he, through testing, through trials, through proving, showed himself a true friend of God. Among the things that Abraham did to earn this reputation is this story here found in Genesis 13. So Genesis 13:1 says, "And Abram went up out of Egypt, he and his wife, and all that he had, and Lot with him, into the south." So they come out of Egypt, and that was kind of a learning, a very embarrassing situation for Abram there, but out of Egypt he came. Abram was very rich in cattle and silver and in gold. And he went on his journeys from the south, even to Bethel, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Hai, unto the place of the altar which he had made there at the first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. And Lot also, which went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. And the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. And there was a strife between the herdmen of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle. And the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelled then in the land. And Abram said unto Lot, Let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. And the Lord said unto Abram, after that Lot was separated from him, Lift up now thine eyes and look from the place where thou art northward, southward and eastward and westward. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. And I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. Arise, walk through the land in the length of it, and in the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. Then Abram removed his tent, and came and dwelt in the plain of Mamre, which is in Hebron, and built there an altar unto the Lord. So that was a scenario that Abram and Lot faced. So today, we face similar situations. If that story was today, there's different ways that this could be played out. But if that story was today, you could say that it like this. The land they were living in was overpopulated. Both of them had businesses that were thriving. They both had thriving businesses. Competition was intense, was fierce. And their managers saw that current business and future growth were unsustainable because of the market the way it was. If something didn't change soon, they were going to go backwards. So the managers took it on themselves to duke this out. Words were shared, phone calls made, lawyers were retained. They were going to take care of this. Of course, Abram had he was there first. So his manager thought that they had supremacy because he was there first. He was the more established firm. He had given the technical knowledge and the seed money to this upstart nephew of his to start his own business. Why would this guy even think to run them out of business? So the fight heated up. Pushback from Lot's camp was strong. There was no way they were going to back down. It wasn't right for Abram and company to be so selfish with their resources. We have just as much right to their market as they do. So word of this struggle came to the owners. Abram said, "Let me see what I can do." So he called a meeting with Lot and said, "Look, brother, this is not a good way to coexist. We can't be productive. We can't be productive doing this." He said, "Here's what I can do, or what I will do." And Abram took, he was the humble man here. And he said, "You just take," he said, we have the whole state. He said, "You pick out whatever you want. You take the side of the state that works best for you, and I'll take the other side." So Lot, he's ambitious. And he goes back and he talks to his guys, and they look through the records and see that, well, maybe the north side of the state will work best for what we're doing here, you know, because they've got better highways and better, just a higher income level over there, and this'll work best. So they run their new budgets and decide that they're gonna run this off of that side. So they go back to Abram and they say, "You know what? That's a good offer you made us. I think we'll take the north side of the state." Okay. So Abram, he goes to the south side, but all the people are poor there. Not much water. Roads are bad. And it's just not, if you look at it on paper, it just doesn't pencil out. But that's what he said. For the sake of peace, Abram was going to take a hit. So Lot moved his headquarters up north, and Abram went south. And Abram was feeling a bit discouraged. And he wondered if he did the right thing. And Lot went north and was happy because everything was going well. And after 1 year, Lot's business was doing very, very well. And Abram received a visit from God, and God told him, he said, "You know what, Abram?" He said, "Don't worry. Just look around. You look north and east and west and south. Everywhere you look," he said, "don't worry about it." He said, "It'll all be yours someday. Your family will have it. It's all yours. So don't worry." And you know, Abram's business didn't go in the ground. Abram had a relationship with God, and there was no strife in his camp, in his company. It was all good. But Lot's company was doing very, very well. Financially, it was doing very well. And profit margins were high. And they could buy anything they wanted. They expanded. They moved into town. And they got it working very well. But Lot didn't have that relationship with God that Abram did. And Lot, he himself, he still had that relationship, but his family, he lost his family. And they didn't have a whole lot to do with God. They still had family get-togethers, but it wasn't the same as it had been. And God came down and he threw some adverse circumstances. Lot's business disintegrated. And Lot just made it out. Just made it out. Lost his wife, lost his family. Well, he had two daughters, but they ended up in a little cave, lost their house, lost everything they had worked for. And it didn't take long. Yeah, it didn't take long at all for Lot's business to go to nothing. And God blessed Abraham. Abraham was a man who was a peacemaker. And God blessed him. Abraham's descendants, Abraham's legacy lived for all the way to now. I mean, his legacy is living on. Lot's descendants, nobody knows about them. Or I don't know about them. Maybe some people might, but you don't read about them too much. Abraham's attitude of peacemaking, although he took the fall for peace, God blessed that. How is it with us? Do we find ourselves in similar circumstances? Do we have to make hard decisions sometimes between making peace or making money? You can fill in the blanks. I'm sure you know your life. I know my life and sometimes how that works. But how do we respond? How do I respond? How do I respond in when there's conflict between somebody that I know and me? Do I have the mind of Christ? You know, there was a man and a lady that I talked with here a couple weeks ago that had an opportunity to demonstrate peace or to demonstrate anger. And I'm not sure exactly where they all came out, but this lady had taken care of her dad for 9 years, I think. 10 years, 9 or 10 years. And because of she didn't have a job, she had given up her job, and she took care of her dad, paid the bills, or managed his affairs, and did all this. Her and her husband did. They lived there in his house. But her brother, when they were gone on a trip, her brother had reworked the will and selfishly cut them out of it. And the dad died. The dad died, and 3 days after the funeral, they read this will. They found out that they were the will that they had a copy of. There was a later version of it, and they were cut out of it. They got nothing out of the estate. They were under the impression they were going to have the house and the land that the house was on. So they had made no arrangements whatsoever. They had in their contents were all there in the house. And after they read this will, or while they were reading the will, the brother was there, and he had had the sheriff come out, and he had lawyers all there, and he was there to defend it. But after they read the will and had this was a real blow to them. They gave him 5 days to get off the property. And these are 70 and 75-year-old people. This isn't just young people. Gave him a short time to get off the property. But they have a terrible, bitter attitude in their heart towards the brother. They didn't do anything physically to him, but in their heart, they really, really wish they could. But how is it with me, if I am in that situation, am I able to respond in a peacemaking attitude? Or can I respond like Christ would? You know, life is full of these tests, these opportunities to make peace, to be peacemakers. And the challenge I'd like to leave with us is to let's be aware of the opportunities that we have. Whether it's to protect our brother or sister from negative gossip, whether it's protecting our neighbor's reputation, or being willing to take the short end of the stick when we get in situations that are disagreeable. I'd like to read some verses here. Romans 8, verse 6, it says, "For to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. Carnally minded is being selfish and looking out for me. It glories in sowing discord, in tearing other people down, and lifting myself up. Carnally minded does not make for peace." So carnally minded is death. Spiritually minded is life and peace. Romans 14, verse 19 says, "Let us therefore follow after the things which make for peace, and things wherewith one may edify another." Ephesians 4, 3 says, "Endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace." Is that our goal? Do we try to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace in our brotherhood? Hebrews 12:14 says, "Follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord." There's a connection between peace and holiness. And the reason for that is because God is the author of peace, and holiness is to be like Christ. Galatians 5:22, peace is a fruit of the Spirit. It says, "But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, and faith." And the last verse here, 2 Corinthians 13:11, it says, "Finally, brethren, farewell. Be perfect. Be of good comfort. Be of one mind. Live in peace, and the God of love and peace shall be with you. I'd like to leave the challenge. God is the author of peace. Let's reflect Christ. Making peace or being a peacemaker is a proof that Christ is working in our life. The devil's work is to create havoc, to destroy peace. Wherever we can, let's create environments of peace, environments where God's kingdom can be built, where the devil's not allowed to work his destruction. And then I'll close with the text verse. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Let's kneel for prayer.